Hello, guys. Can you see, hear me?
Yep. Hello.
Lupin. Hi, all.
Daryl is here. We wait for a couple of 1 minute.
Sounds good. Just let me know when you want me to get started.
Yeah, we have to go through some administrivia first.
Perfect.
These calls so that we get ourselves situated and then we go right into it.
Sounds good.
And I'll give you your props, your introduction. And then we can get going. I've already started recording, so be aware of what you say. If you don't want to say anything, that's fine too. I'm not talking to you, Daryl, of course, because you're the main event. People are still joining, so I'm just... So Kelly is offered to take notes, which is very helpful, always. So before we start, I have to talk about the antitrust policy. Hyperledger expects all the working groups and SIGs to follow the antitrust policy and announce it before every call. Details, you can find details at the antitrust link that is on the meeting agenda page, which is also the meeting notes page. The other thing that we do here is we talk about the code of conduct, which is that we treat each other with respect, even when we are disagreeing with each other. Which is important, I guess, for bringing out the best in all of us. Can you guys hear me clearly? Anyway, I'm not going to be talking much more.
Yes.
Yep.
Coming through.
Yeah. So I'm wondering whether we should go a quick round through the participants. A 10-second pitch about why each one of you are here, and also if you do not want to say anything, that's fine too. Ankit? Anchit?
Yeah, my name is Anchit. I am a software developer by profession, and currently I'm exploring identity and SSI related stuff and looking forward to learn and contribute in this emerging area.
Dan?
Thanks.
Yeah, Dan Bachenheimer with Accenture. I'm on our digital identity innovations team. And yeah, shifting focus from biometrics to SSI, basically, decentralized identity.
Drummond?
Hi, Drummond Reed, Chief Trust Officer at Evernym and a trustee at Sovereign Foundation, co-editor of the DID specification, and deep, so deep in SSI that I can't see my way out.
That's great. Now, I can't see most of the other participants. Maybe I'm doing something wrong here. But if you have not been called on, just bear with me. And you can also just start talking about yourself if you raise your hand and get on there. So Daryl is already warned us that he is having problems on his laptop. So anyway, we have some time to talk about ourselves.
I'm Julie Esther, Chief Experience Officer for Cedar Ledger, one of Daryl O'Donnell's co-workers. We're deep into SSI 2 with our MyCUID product, soon to be rebranded Member Pass at the start of 2020.
Bobby.
Hello.
We were doing introductions, 10 seconds.
Okay. Hi, Bobby Mascara, Ledger Academy. I'm also the chair of the Learning Materials Working Group, and I'm here to offer any help I can with this group.
Axel, 10 seconds intro.
Hello, I'm in a very noisy place, Sabi, mostly muting myself.
Jason.
Am I back now?
Hello. Yeah, you're back, and this is loud and clear.
Perfect. Good. No, my Mac has gone. It went nuts this morning. It's still apparently nuts.
So we're just walking down the participant list. 10-second intros.
Hello, I'm Jay. I'm from South Korea. I work at LG as a blockchain developer, and also hosting SSI Meetup Korea. I'm working with Alex Bruske to host SSI Meetup offline. So I'm quite an evangelist in SSI field in Korea and trying to get things done. So yeah, I'm here to get information about like how things are going.
Great. Who's on next?
Jim Mason. I'm helping multiple clients with Hyperledger Fabric blockchain projects and have a need to improve my knowledge in the DID area because that's relevant to some of the work I'm going to be doing shortly. And then I also lead the Boston Hyperledger meetup. Thanks.
Who's on next? My list.
Could be me. Stefan Mui, I'm a KYC consultant. I'm not an IT expert, but I'm more focusing on the regulatory front, and I'm particularly interested in the use of digital IDs in the financial sector.
Luca.
Yes, this is Luca Boldrin from Italy, a certification authority and trustworthy provider. We are Sovereign Steward, and we implemented a wallet on top of Sovereign, and we are very much involved in the European self-sovereign identity community.
Beautiful. Ravi Kant?
Hi, everyone. This is Ravi Agrawal, Blockchain Principal Consultant, Infosys Consulting, based out of Pune, India. We have been actively exploring SSI for our banking clients.
Lasse.
Hey guys, here it's Lasse Monk from Deutsche Börse. I work as an analyst and we're engaged in the topic of DID.
I couldn't hear you, Lasse. Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I mean, you did. I could hear you, but I didn't make out where you
were. All right. Okay. I'll go again. I'm an analyst at Deutsche Börse here in Frankfurt, Germany.
Okay.
In the topic of decentralized identity, hence why I'm in this working group.
Sumit.
Hi, this is Sumit, part of Capgemini team. Have been joining this group on and off. Yeah, have been working a bit on blockchain and trying to kind of see the opportunities where I can contribute more.
Who did I miss? Um, I missed Kelly, of course, but she normally does not speak when she's taking notes. Thanks a lot, Kelly. And unless someone else wants to go, I will start with introducing Daryl. And my apologies if I did not call on you because I only see part of the screen. Anyway, Daryl, I came to know about Daryl just recently, but I know that he's a very important person in this space. He's got a company called Continuum Partners, and they are engaged with everybody who's anybody in SSI and in identity space. So he's going to talk about digital wallets. We already had presentations, one on agents versus hubs.
Agents versus hubs.
The meaning of digital wallet changing. And Daryl will take us through. Thank you, Daryl. I can see his screen. Take it away, Daryl. I think it's because of Daryl's two devices. I do see the double sound as well. But Daryl will take us through this. His presentation, and I will remain silent from now.
I suspect it had something to do with his. As soon as we started seeing his screen, so hopefully he's reconfiguring.
Can you guys hear me right now?
Yes.
I've never used this. It's quite different on an iPad. I apologize for that. Let me see if this works. I'm going to jump back over to my screen.
Well, we were seeing your screen. It went away again.
Yes, it is jumping over to his iPad. So I imagine.
How about now? Can you hear me? Can you see it?
Yes, we can see it. Yes, and we can hear you.
Winner, chicken dinner. Let's get going. So my name is Daryl O'Donnell. I've been in this self-sovereign identity space for some time, for the past year and a bit. The vast majority of my time, I am the CTO for CU Ledger. CU Ledger is a credit union company where we're using SSI, specifically a sovereign basis. Drummond is one of our advisors, and Evernim is a partner. And so we're deep into this wallet space. But this wallet, about just over a year ago, I started working with a bunch of group of people about creating a report or a study that to kind of understand the landscape of what is a digital wallet. Anyone who knows me, I'm not the report person. I can't stand doing reports, but the reason we did this one was at the very different events that were being talked about with self-sovereign identity, decentralized identity. There had been so much hand waving that the wallet will do that. The wallet will solve that problem. Yeah, no, the wallet handles that. That a few of us, there's multiple sponsors to this, really got together to say, what really is this wallet thing? What do we need to understand so that we can plan for the next year, 2, 3, 5, 10 years of our digital life cycle, particularly in banking, telcos, security? It affects CU Ledger just as much. The lack of clarity was causing a lot of projects to kind of either collide or miss fundamental pieces, and they were, you know, kind of dying out and fading out because they didn't understand that, you know, there's pieces missing here. There are pieces to a wallet that are required in order to get the very, you know, sort of the bare minimums. And defining what a digital wallet was really was effectively at that time impossible. I'm not saying it's overly possible now, but that's what the research was all about. So we got together and tried to kick it off and figure out what's going on and what's that bare minimum. So the report itself, it came out in, I'll get make sure that when we get these this link, and I also have a longer video we did on SSI Meetup, a little bit longer of a description of the actual report itself. The report came out in March. It's not light. I have never intended to write reports, as I mentioned. Apparently 90 pages is apparently relatively thick and heavy. It landed with a thud, but it seems to have hit a chord. And what's interesting, I was just telling the C-Ledger team, is it's been quiet on the digital the wallet report for quite some time. The last week has been, I don't know what's going on, but everyone is talking about reports, and it's not me. It's just been on the wallet, sorry, digital wallets, and I've been pinged multiple times on different dimensions and stuff. So it's a good resource to take a look at. So it was sponsored by ETB, a bank in Canada. TELUS is a telco in Canada, and Two Keys is a security consultancy in my company as well. And again, our rationale was that the wallet is nowhere close to being defined, but it's absolutely crucial for us to understand where we're going with this decentralized identity, self-sovereign identity movement. We went through and listed a ton. I'm not going to go into too much detail on really any of these. We looked at what are the capabilities of a wallet. This kind of, you can see it iterating through, and there's a lot of different areas. Each one has its own like half page to a page in the report. But you get into things like, what does it mean when I have an iPhone, an iPad, I need to synchronize, I need to have multiple devices, I need to be able to back stuff up to a vault. How do you notify me? How do I do a true recovery without you being able to take my wallet over? What does it look like when we're offline? What happens if I'm unconscious and you need to get access to some of my information? How do I know if I can trust a particular wallet? All of these different things come into play, and they're important to understand. And we also define sort of as a barrier, you know, minimum viable wallet. I don't think I use that term in the report, but the idea that, you know, there's a bare minimum of what we need to do in order to have some basic wallet capabilities. And we're using that in C Ledger. We're seeing, you know, Evernym has it, StreetCred has it. There's a whole bunch of these different wallets. IBM has one. These different wallets are starting to converge on the bare minimums. Another area that's really key and it intersects well with wallets is agents. Vipin mentioned you've already had some people talking about agents and hubs. Wallets, in my view, include some agent capabilities. Otherwise, you have this dumb piece of storage that you can't do anything with. But you start taking a look at what types of agents are there, as well as answering a fundamental question, which was anathema when we first started surfacing and sort of bubbling this question of, and Drummond and I think actually did the presentation at IAW about a year ago, which is who is in your wallet? And that for the pure crypto blockchain realm, decentralized the world people is like, what are you talking about? How could there ever be anybody else? And frankly, I don't want to have a digital wallet that I am the sole custodian of. I don't trust myself. I'm too much of a scattered brain. If I get sick, something happens and I'm not around. If there's an accident, I don't want that wallet sitting there and having, you know, someone have to understand some really weird way of recovering things. I may want people in there for my health, for my finance, for my legal reasons. This break glass is a particular case that TELUS in Canada, for example, telco, but also runs a lot of health records. They actually got portions of that segmented off that are, you know, very private. Canada's got a really high level of privacy expectation, but there is a break glass in case of emergency capability that says I can't get a hold of patients and or they're not able to respond. I need to know the bare minimum so that I don't accidentally give them a drug that's going to kill them or that I understand why they're in this particular case. So there's actually this interesting capability to think about. We have concepts of, raised concepts in report of insurers. How can you have an insurance group inside that wallet of yours doing something? What would it mean if you had someone monitoring and ensuring the contents of your wallet or ensuring the things that your wallet is related to? You also may have monitors, auditors. You may have a corporate wallet. How do you know that an executive is, you know, acting within their own authority? Have they been delegated a particular responsibility? And do you need to know when they use that? There's a whole bunch of different use cases here about these agents that really become much richer wallets. And those agents have different roles depending on what you need. You can have a pure you know, pure self-sovereign crypto wallet that has nothing to do with anything happens to you, it just kind of vanishes into the ether. Perfect. But you could also have a much richer thing where your wallet is kind of this thing that's kind of taking care of you. It's a digital assistant. But, you know, I don't know if you would call it a wallet in 3 or 4 years when it starts talking to you, but who knows? The report goes through that in depth. But I wanted to cover off for this meeting here, because all that content is available, is talk about what we, and let's say we, I'm part of the community. I've been, there's many of us out there. I'll talk sort of broadly, but also certainly at CU Ledger, we've been running into quite a few, crisp clarifications when we're looking at how do we get from today, where we, you know, this is exactly what we have today, into what I would call tomorrow, which is, you know, small changes, where can we be? And then that longer term future, how do we bridge to that? How do we bridge to that realm where we have our decentralized identity and it works? It does things for us. We're not worried. It can't take us over. It's meeting the needs that we're kind of all envisioning as the types of people who are more visionary. How do we get there? One of the key learnings we've had is that concept I think we use in the report called mini wallet, which we're kind of now calling an embedded wallet in the C Ledger realm at least, is there's a lot of cases where we have one connection, one DIDCOM connection, and one credential. There's no need for a normal human who isn't deep into this obscure SSI identity realm to care about a connection or a credential, because it's kind of, it can operate invisibly for them, but they do receive all the benefits of having private communications. There are benefits on security, two-way security, which is really interesting. One of the biggest learning that CLedger has been that by asking the following question of a member of a credit union, are you on the phone with Suncoast Credit Union? That's one of our customers at CLedger. Suncoast wants to know that this really is, you know, Drummond Reed on the other end of the call. But Drummond Reed actually wants to know that it's really Suncoast on the other end of the call. Never occurred to us that that would be a primary driver for the member. And that's something that this embedded wallet capability and this very simplification, simple way of using messaging through the DIDCOM channel has really surfaced. We've also identified that backup and recovery is absolutely crucial. There are not any, I don't see great answers out there right now beyond the Uber crypto people who have, you know, cold wallets and have some sort of recovery thing, and God forbid anything happen, because they may not have anybody in their circle of life that can actually help recover things, because no one has a clue, or their family has no clue what a cold storage stainless steel thing in a safe deposit box is. Backup and recovery remains to be problematic. We're taking a look at it at the CU Ledger front. We won't put a critical asset in to a wallet that cannot be recovered easily. But if we take a look at how we're using the CU Ledger, it's not wildly different than the debit card in your wallet. If you lose it, it's kind of painful. You get a new one, there we go. Same idea. You lose your digital wallet, you get a new phone, you forgot the port, you didn't do a backup, you want to get back, great. Come into the branch, call into the call center, log in, use the processes by which you got it in the first place, and get a new one. It's no cost to it, just get a new one. Agents, hubs, and vaults, I'm not going to go into too much details, but these are, I had a vault as a service term in the report, but there wasn't a delineation that a vault was different than a hub. There wasn't really a crisp delineation of what a hub was, vice an agent, vice a vault. So that's kind of being nice to see that, and Vipin sent out a great summary earlier this week on, I think it was called the Super Friends call last week, where there's been this discussion in these various different groups, W3C, DIF, and others, and certainly the Hyperledger community is more on the agent side, DIF is on the hub side, and W3C side is kind of on the vault side, but there's blurring, heavy blurring between. So there's a great discussion going on there. I think we're going to find there's more crispness that comes out of that. We remain at the CU Ledger side wanting to make sure that things are as decentralized as reasonable. We don't want to force centralization. We don't want to force particular providers. It's happy to see that the big providers are actually trying to push themselves away from being actually able to, you know, accidentally conquer the market. You know, they don't mean to. We're also seeing certification and accreditation in the medium term is becoming crucial. This comes out of part of the report, and I've blogged on this, and I've been yammering on it for about a year and a half now. The question I ask is, can I trust Bubba's wallet? If Bubba puts a wallet in the app store, do I know if I can trust that or not? As an individual, can I, as a credit union or as a supplier to a credit union, see a ledger, can I trust that wallet that you just installed when, after Bubba released in the App Store? Really, the answer is probably no, unless there is some kind of a certification and accreditation regime. Right now, it's a small community. We're working in, you know, very close quarters with the key suppliers in the community. But in time, you know, Bubba's going to issue a wallet. And we don't know if Bubba's an awesome person or if Bubba's acting on behalf of North Korea. We don't know. Those certifications and accreditations are going to become much, much more important. I don't particularly have answers on that, but just something to keep in mind as we go ahead, as the protocols get nailed down. How do we make sure that the accreditation and certification frameworks are in place? And then we have a way of looking at, you know, how are we doing the hardware storage of keys? Are we using trust execution environment, secure enclaves? Is the software certified? Have we gone through NIST certification? Are there libraries that are trusted? And how are we getting to that point? We've also noted a business shift, is that the tech community has been deep in the weeds. I'm as guilty as any. But we're starting to get to the point where I've used the analogy that SSI is kind of like the rabbit hole where Alice looks down and, you know, how deep does the rabbit hole go? Some groups don't go all the way to the bottom of the rabbit hole. Other groups grab a hire a backhoe and keep digging down sideways in every direction that they never needed to go. Part of that is because the business requirements that we're operating from are loose. So we're finding right now there's a real hard need to get into the business shift to focus on those business requirements that can help drive the technology, so that technology doesn't drive business and policy and that type of thing. Mini wallets, I've talked about a little bit. Key idea there is you need to make sure whatever wallet you create is fit for purpose. In our C Ledger realm, we're very, very focused on making sure it's member-centric, but meeting the needs of a credit union, and just dead simple. The user experience is absolutely crucial. Showing somebody a verifiable credential as a proof that they can change attributes and stuff like that, I have zero interest in that as a human. I think it's really cool. I think it's really important. But that user experience is horrendously awful for a regular person who is not the least bit concerned. But also keep in mind that at C-Ledger, our job is working for credit unions whose job is to protect their members. And they're not-for-profits that actually do that. So we have a different view, so our user experience can be a little bit different. Backup recovery, I'm just going to rip through these because we already covered off most of this. Make sure. One key thing on backup recovery, as I mentioned it, hinted at it, got to make sure when your recovery process is at least as robust as your authentication process, meaning you aren't going to give my wallet away, or the person backing up my wallet isn't going to steal my wallet. That's the, you don't want your wallet backup to be the primary vector of attack in taking over your life. Went through this already. Oh yeah, an analog for the, I don't know how to go back on my iPad. I'll just keep going. But an analog for the certification accreditation might be something along the lines of the 5 Alliance. A couple things on the business, and I think I'll be done and we'll jump into questions. But as you mentioned, it's a business problem. The time for tech, I would say it's largely over, meaning it doesn't need to be tech-driven anymore. There's definitely tech. There's a whole bunch of technology that needs to be built out. Another key thing, and Drummond's on the call, can go into this in more detail if we want to get into the questions and stuff, is there seems to be an initiative that the term trust over IP has come out. And there's a very recent initiative to actually consider moving that as a peer of Hyperledger, where it focuses particularly on the specifications, the reference architecture and a reference implementation, much along the lines, if you're familiar with the Linux Foundation, of like the GraphQL, so that the focus can be on the business needs, and also making sure that we understand exactly what's going on. The idea is that it would feed into groups like this, feed into Hyperledger Aries, Hyperledger Indy, the various different groups that really need that crisp input. W3C is another group that would need. And it would coordinate with those various different SDOs. This is animated. As we know, these groups, the Indy, Aries, Ursa, are all deeply, tightly related. This is a part of the group that the Trust Over IP project would look at. And this is a slide from Drummond that's normally a build, but you can see on the left-hand side, we've got the tech stack, where we talk about the DID networks, whether that be Sovereign, whether that be Ethereum, Uport, Veris One, Bitcoin, whatever. Layer two is how do we actually talk to each other? If I'm on a different ledger, if I'm on Hyperledger Fabric and you're on this, how do I talk to you? That's the communication layer of DIDCOM. Layer three is credential exchange, and then on top of that, we have the governance frameworks. Drummond and I work hard. Drummond leads the sovereign governance framework. A whole bunch of us working on that. We know how important that is. But then we realized on the governance side, there's a very similar and parallel stack. I won't dive into it here, but we need to have these ability to manage the networks, to manage the various different providers, those credential governance frameworks. This is where the Steel Ledger realm starts to get into, as well as the meta system. That the top two is where Steel Ledger is really interested in participating on making sure that this community is getting what it needs so that we can build these things out, and we know that there's a deep web of trust underneath these things. I think that's about it I have for now. If there's any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them.
Guys, don't be shy
around Daryl. Daryl, that's great. You covered a lot of ground there. So I'm actually going to start out in question mode rather than answer mode around the Trust RP stuff. There is, I've in the chat, I've noted that the terminology, the core terms that you were using there, one of the things we've seen, and there was sessions about this the last IAW, is that there isn't consistent usage of the term. In fact, one of the most nebulous terms, as you said in your presentation, is the term wallet, what exactly it means. And different communities or vendors are using that term in different ways. So I'm curious how you define the term, and then maybe sort of what definitions you've seen and what direction you see that term growing into.
I'm sitting without my notes in front of me, Drum, but the sovereign indie realm typically has used, and I think they've actually started to shift away from, you know, wallet being solely about key management. We're starting to use the term key management system to manage the keys and connections and the various different crypto. But a wallet at minimum needs to be able to store and retrieve things. It needs to be able to interact with various different parties. And that's where we kind of get this blurring of what's an agent. I would call this more of a communication agent. We'd call this a DIDCOM and credential exchange. Without all of those capabilities, you have a very strange, quote, wallet. Some of the work in the, certainly I'm obviously familiar with the sovereign in the Aries realm, where we talk about having, you know, a, quote, wallet that is really a config file. That's, to me, not a wallet, but we can draw the lines at some point. I think there's definitely work needs to be done on that, though. Does that help, Drum?
Yeah, let me ask this question. It's great. Dan Bachenheimer is just in the chat, put in the
3.84.
Yeah, which is and he can give the complete.
Yeah, so ISO TC307 is the blockchain standards, and CD is a committee draft 22739, which is terminology. Section 3.84 defines a wallet as basically, as you said, an application used to generate, manage, store, or use private and public keys. And then 3.62 is a definition of private key. 3.65 is a definition of public key. And then there's a note, a wallet can be implemented as software or hardware.
Right.
But looks like what Daryl was saying that it cannot be just a key management thing, because without connectivity, without a storage of credentials. So the problem seems to be that all of these are needed for a fully functional system to manage credentials and to expose credentials and to gather credentials.
Vipin, you're right on the money. I'm one of the four co-chairs of the Glossary Project, the Decentralized Identity Foundation, which is basically exploring these terms and not trying, come up with one definition of them all, but trying to sort of pull out these different definitions to help
the, you know, those working within the industry start to recognize and arrive at commonality for all of our benefit. So, and I shared with them a story that, while I can't name the specific Evernym customer involved, it's a very large financial services provider. And I was at a 2-day workshop a few weeks ago where their usage of the word wallet was a very clear superset of this definition from ISO definition, because they were using the term as the complete term for the what I think most of us would call the mobile app that that you would be using typically on a smartphone for everything that you do as a holder of credentials under the SSI model. They were just flat out calling that a wallet or a mobile wallet. So Daryl, I'm curious, have you seen the same thing, and what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, 100% in the wild of what we're seeing is the term wallet resonates with people. I know in the deep tech space, we've used the wallet in what is now kind of this also is a great definition of a key management system. The term wallet is a more human term. I think what's happened is, and forgive me for saying this, I'm not known for being subtle. Some of these terms have been locked down way before they should have been locked down. Blockchain is still an emerging space, especially in identity. I don't think there's anybody here who doesn't consider their personal wallet part of their identity. We need to deal with the human in that. So some of these locked down terms, and we're seeing it more and more in our space, we're seeing from, you know, different credit unions, I'm seeing it all over, that this definition is nowhere near enough. It's a piece of it. It's a very important piece of it.
So it is a, it seems to be still a work in progress, right? CD means, what does it mean, Dan?
Yeah, committee draft. It's definitely
It's a draft.
Yeah, it has not been finalized yet. Yep, for sure.
So there are two views here. One is, of course, that this is not the time to finalize, which is seems to be what Daryl is saying. Second is, we are engaged. We should be engaged with 307 because there was a message on the TSE list from Todd Little from Oracle, who's on 307 as well, ISO 307. So he wants to engage with the community. He wants for there to be a way to engage with the community, but looks like the large commercial interests are the ones who are driving ISO because it's a membership thing and all that. So there's all kinds of currents going there. And Daryl, you're right. The, you know, I worked on a project which was called One Card back in 95. This was on the bleeding edge. We were going to get everybody's cards on one card, and it was a smart card-based system. And we also had a sort of a wallet, which was just basically holding a debit, you know, like a debit card money. But of course, that project didn't go anywhere because it was too much in front and too... you know, this is in the 90s, so that didn't go anywhere. But today we seem to have these movements, and then you're saying, you know, so there is the tension between setting standards too early and setting standards too late. We have to have a via media somewhere in between. So I guess...
Agreed.
CD, community draft, may take responses from us. I don't know whether you have to be a member in order to do that response or not, but.
Yes, and you can certainly use me, Dan Bachnummer, use anybody on the standards committee. There's corporate folks such as myself with Accenture, but there's lots of national standards bodies, including NIST from the U.S. And DIN from Germany and BSI from Britain, so that are represented there. So it's not just commercial interests. There's lots of national standards bodies as well.
Yeah, I think I'm actually a member of the Canadian one, SSI, or, oh my God, is it actually called SSI? I need to look at SSC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's a, it's tough. It's one of the things, you know, at blockchain, C-Ledger came out of an initiative. What is blockchain? It's in our name, Ledger. It came from the time period where there was a lot of, oh, blockchain the world, because blockchain type of work. And it's natural for the SDOs to step in. And I don't, you know, again, I'm not subtle. I don't think it's a land grab or anything, but they're trying to, you know, make their mark and make sure that they, you know, are have an important role to play. What we've learned is that some of those terms, and we've had hard arguments over pretty much that exact definition. I've been fighting with people in the sovereign indie community for some time, and it's finally realized that, okay, there isn't a human on the planet who considers that to be a wallet, except for those in the crypto networking tech deep code space. But that's a 0.01% or less of the world. So it'll be interesting to see how we can get into that and how we can help, you know, form that better definition of a wallet. Which you can see why we wanted to go and do this study, even though I can't stand in reports.
Yeah.
There seem to be even in your document and subsequently, there seem to be doubts as to, not doubts, but it seems to be an evolving term, is what I'm trying to say.
It's definitely evolving. Here's what we're hearing: less fight, meaning, you know, when you come at different things from different angles, what I'm sensing at least is there's a lot less schism. There's a lot less you're just wrong, as opposed to, okay, cool, where are the lines? Are there different kinds of wallets? Is there a wallet with a IoT style of wallet, and how does it move along a continuum type of thing?
Yeah, any more questions? There are a ton more questions that are possible. So, and you can also hear that I'm in New York City. But anyway, go ahead and ask questions, you know, so that we can surface some of these deep problems and also opportunity.
Yeah, this is Dan again. I would just say more of a comment, you know, because you talked about wallet in terms of IoT and things. So what in TC307, identity is defined as a natural, there's four dimensions of identity: natural person, legal entity, thing, which is IoT basically, and process. So you could have a process has an identity, kind of like a, let's say, a software version. So you know, we try to keep that in mind in TC307, that identity has those four dimensions.
And that's a great set of differences. We in the sovereign realm, we've specifically looked at three, which we, you know, it's people, organizations, call it legal entity, and things, of which process would be kind of a digital thing, but they're very similar, you can see. So here's the question I got. Okay, you're using a wallet, so let's use the human analog. How does an IoT device put stuff in or pull stuff out or use a wallet if all it does is manage keys and store keys? There needs to be at minimum some ability to exchange some communication and the ability to accept an offer of a credential, for example, or offer of a connection. Similar for processes, similar for organizations and people. So I like your definition. I mean, we've had you know, nice debates, nothing argumentative, over how far does thing go, right? Does it, that are pets things, or are pets their own category, or are animals, and is a process? That's, I can see the, that's just a line, draw it, right?
Right, and I think this is where agents, now we're bleeding into agents, right? So wallet storage, an agent is more of the communications process, and, you know, to make things happen with what's in your wallet.
Yeah, from a sovereign glossary standpoint, because we've had to nail down these terms in order to have define a governance framework and policies and legal documents around being, you know, stewards or different roles in the network. We've we paired wallet and agent as you know, wallet more called the storage facing side of managing those that sensitive information. Definitely keys. I think there were six different things we've identified that could be stored in a wallet. And then the agent was the active process that basically wrapped around the wallet that handled communications in and out, form connections, did all the the software and communications processing associated with it. So that's how we've been using those two terms. But I've also, you know, that's why I wanted to listen and get and you know, and Daryl, I know, has been listening and Sue Ledger listening to the market as to how are they using the terms. And it's fascinating to see that, like I said, that one meeting, it was just absolutely clear that we almost never heard the term agent coming from the team we were meeting with, because everything they were referring to, they just wrapped it into the term wallet or mobile wallet. And everything that in the, you know, issuer holder verifier triangle that happens with verifiable credentials, they just referred to everything a holder did, they did with a wallet. So it was like, oh, they're not, you know, they're basically just subsuming the term agent and assuming that in their view, it was part of what a wallet did. And this is just feedback. I'm not, you know, trying to argue one term or the other. I'm just, I was curious as to what Daryl was seeing. And then Daryl, the question I have specifically for you is, what are you seeing, and what now? I'm going to ask you to prognosticate a little bit because you're the one deepest in having done this report. What do you think is going to be the evolutionary path of what you're calling the embedded wallets or the minting wallets?
Yeah, so we were surprised at how much push there is right now for really an embedded wallet. There's just little desire to have a wallet app sitting beside, for example, a banking application run by a credit union. So what I think is we're really going to go through a few stages here, one of which is where you have an embedded wallet where the use case is very, very industry-centric, and there's no need to understand as a person or to have a separate storage or interaction between apps, that you may have two credit unions you work with, and they each have their own embedded wallet capabilities. You don't even know they're there. But then there's going to be at some point where there's going to be a wallet app or something that those apps can then rely upon as their wallet, meaning that they don't want to manage the stuff inside of a secure enclave, the trust execution environment. They want to leverage an app for that because there's a cost to embedding it yourself. And over time, I think we're going to end up with the operating systems and or discrete wallet devices, meaning iOS, Android, Samsung OS, we'll build these primitives into, and this is where we want to make sure we get our standards at the ISO level, the OASIS, the W3C, IETF, whatever, in place, so that we actually have some interoperability between these things. I look at kind of that, so that's kind of the bridging strategy of what I'm called today, tomorrow, and in the longer-term future. Does that help, Drum?
Yeah, that's, I think, very, very well articulated.
But sorry, is that more for the embedded wallets or is that also for the mini wallets? Because I'm not quite sure what the
the term we used in the report, I think, was mini wallet. What we're hearing now is people want to embed a wallet. It's the same thing. It's kind of a wallet that you don't really know is a wallet. So yeah, I see that sort of the embedded / mini wallet as an initial pattern, followed by a discrete wallet app that other apps talk to. And then hopefully that on a standards basis will go into the operating system.
So then it becomes, Daryl, a standard set of OS services that apps use, just like all the other OS services apps use today.
Yeah, just like Touch ID, Face ID, which is an OS call.
Yep, exactly. Yep, I don't have any disagreement. The fascinating thing is I do think that's the logical endpoint. It's from here to there. It will be the most fascinating part.
I think all this stuff is happening because of the amorphous nature of that term. On the one hand, rooted in human experience, and the other in digital realm where we interact with so many different services through some kind of a portal, you know, and the unification of those portals is in one sense what we are talking about, and also releasing the control that the portal, you know, is being held by the service you interact with to get you some more of that control. So when you're talking about this large space, there's bound to be some problems in lighting upon a specific term for this kind of experiential, for this kind of experience. And then, of course, you brought up the question of delegation and what are pets, what are things that are in between. So when you have categories, then, of course, you're going to have things that shade into one or the other, but also remain, they are concepts that we are familiar with. So classification has that difficulty that sometimes things like pets or things like IoTs that belong to me, IoTs that belong to somebody else, all that, you know, become very difficult. So I think we do need to participate in the ISO 307, because I think with the big companies and the governments participating in it, they may come up with a definition that may not encompass this richness.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, one comment on this. This is Luca Boldrin. I myself involved in TC 307, and especially in the distributed identity group, which produced the report. TR 23246. Overview identity manager, but I must honestly say that it didn't push the subject matters that far. In fact, it's just walking around some known concepts. I would say that it lies behind the discussion, which is ongoing, so sovereign identity for the time being. That's my personal
view. Yeah, it did, and that got canceled, and it's going to be resurrected with a joint working group with SC27 security.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You're right. It's kind of a TC307 is definitely slow moving, but not as nimble as DIF and W3C and it sounds like the folks on this call.
Yeah, I think one of the goals of that Trust Over IP project is to make sure we don't end up in either it's too late for the standard because the industry has gone de facto and we've lost control. There's no interoperability, but you also don't want premature standardization. You don't want to go to standard without knowing the domain. That's one of the things where we're clearly hitting walls right now.
I agree. And, there's tons of pilots out there. I really think that for governments, they're going to be looking to standards and globally accepted standards. And that's where I think ISO comes in, but it is very slow moving. And I think all these different communities are driving forward, obviously, but I do think for wide, especially government adoption, there's going to have to be some, I don't want to say real standards, but some standards that they could go to. And even, DIDs is still a draft, I think they're the key to making a lot of this work. But a government entity that's going to put, to start provisioning identities that are going to be used in the real world are going to want solid, accepted globally or at least regionally interoperable standards.
Totally agreed.
I'm just noting this, Drummond, that Daryl showed the Trust OMP stack. There's an RFC, Hyperledger Aries RFC, that describes it. And I do strongly agree with Daryl. That's why Evernym is one of the companies working to launch this project, that we need a definition of the stack and an ability to communicate about the maturity of both the code and the specs that define the various layers of the stack. And you know, the wallet function at layer two is just critical. That's why Daryl's, you know, report and update is right at the heart of that. There was a major step being taken forward, is that the work on the communications at that layer, called the wallet to wallet, agent to agent communications, being called DIDCOM, because it's DID to DID, decentralized identifier to decentralized identifier, that work, the RFCs, and there are quite a few of them that were created as part of the Hyperledger Aries project, in order to have the appropriate intellectual property protection, because these are protocols, and not just, you know, they're implemented in code, but there's work going on to create these specifications. It's moving to the Decentralized Identity Foundation because it's a JDF, Joint Development Foundation entity, that can have the appropriate intellectual property protections in place. So that's underway and should be accomplished by January, so that so there will be a consolidated set of, you know, evolving specifications. But that's what the Hyperledger Aries wallet implementation, as one reference implementation, is going to be implementing. And the same thing is happening with, you know, the emergence of standards at all levels of the stack. We got the DID working group at layer one, that's at W3C. At layer three, we've got the verifiable credentials formats, where they're already a full the 1.0 format, and signatures are a full W3C standard already. That's the most mature thing. And then at layer four, and the whole thing of interoperable governance frameworks, that work is really, you know, doesn't have a home, other than the work that's been gone on at the Sovereign Foundation, the Sovereign Governance Framework. That's an instance, and what we need to define is, the models and the standardized credentials for those governance frameworks. So anyway, that's just a little background as to where all this fits and why we're going to be launching the Trust Over IP project, the Linux Foundation, sometime in Q1. We're not exactly sure yet here, but it's we're taking steps towards it every day.
So the PDS work, PDS, you know, all that the discussion that you guys all had, the 60 people. Then, you know, moving it into DIF, where they would house both the standards work from all these organizations, as well as the reference implementation, although not, you know, called, you know, not a preferred reference implementation. But there I saw that when people were saying DIDCOM, there was a lot of pushback, and they were saying something about HTTPS, TLS, or whatever. So even on the transport protocol, there seem to be differences. As long as the functional architecture, the functional requirements are clear, then it should be possible to implement the transport in multiple ways. Is my understanding correct?
I think so. The diagram Daryl showed, we refer to hubs at layer two as well. The question of the short answer I'll give, because we could go very deep into the topic, is that the question of storage of encrypted information that's outside of what we've been discussing in terms of wallets and credentials, the things that are critical for layer three in this stack, which is verifiable credential exchange. The broader question of encrypted personal storage, which is what that whole community has been discussing and agreeing that they were going to combine into an overall project hosted at DIFF, but it's a joint project with W3C Credential Community Group, is still an open question. And you're right, the transport protocols you would use or that would be supported to talk to that encrypted storage are still being debated. But I would, as we continue to refine the Trust Over IP stack, we had discussions about that at the Sovereign Connectathon last week. It's Hyperledger Aries and Sovereign Connectathon in Provo, as where that storage piece fits in the stack, because it's really adjacent is the way I think about it. If you choose to store credentials in what has been called a hub or a personal data store that does not have the other functions of a wallet, then you've sort of blurred those two things. I'm curious what Daryl and others, as they've been listening to the whole, you know, call it storage debate, what your view of that is.
Well,
yeah, I'm not. If you don't mind if I just jump in, I've got to run and catch a flight. I'm not as fussed on the storage. I am very concerned that if we make something that is transport dependent, we will limit our options. That's one area that I want to separate the difference between the, can I do NFC? Can I do Bluetooth? Do I have to do HTTPS? If we end up being transport tied to one transport, I think we've really limited ourselves. That's one area. Storage becomes, you know, where are the lines, as Brahmin said. But I need to unfortunately run, folks. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to put my Twitter handle in the chat just in case anyone wants to reach out.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank you again for a wonderful conversation. I think it's gone. And we are at 1 o'clock, but, you know, I don't know whether there's any other calls happening right now. Maybe we can extend this for a minute or two. But the point being that in the end, you know, there's work going on in every, you know, lots of different places. As we saw ISO 307, you know, then we have all these other things. But there's also work in other countries, like, for example, the whole India stack conversation we have been having. Of course, it doesn't conform to our idea of what a perfect SSI system should be, but you know, it is again, it's a question of expediency, because people have to deliver services now, and the India stack is evolving. So all of these different you know, adaptations and implementations have their own rationale. And the point is, can we make changes in these existing systems either directly, or they are forced to make changes because of regulation, laws? In India, for example, Supreme Court has ruled that privacy is a right, and they have to then walk back some of the ways in which they were leaking stuff. But it's still under the, you know, centralized control. But the point being that in the end, how do we converge? How do we all get along in the best possible way, not just imposing our thing on, you know, our standard, our vision on somebody else?
Can I ask, this is Jim Mason, can I ask a really dumb question about the process, not the results of it, but really the process itself? So coming in from the outside, there's clearly a bunch of different standards organizations trying to solve identity. There's very many stakeholders, so to speak, interested in the results and all that. We have multiple implementations for things like wallets and so on, and different blockchains and all that. Is there anybody doing any active work, what I call modeling the system, as an executable model, not implementing the system at all, but actually providing what I call a live model with a DSL. So what I hear from all this discussion, where there's a lot of debate and a lot of different approaches to something, it sounds like that modeling would be an important step in the process to define, I'll call it, a set of interfaces that would be workable for a broad range of needs, so to speak, in these stacks. And I didn't hear anybody mention any real live modeling process that's going on cooperatively. Is there anything like that?
I cannot think of any right now, but I'm sure the specific implementations have had models attached to them, at least in the.
So if you think about you think about a taxonomy or anything you're trying to build, and you have all these different use cases, different domains, and so on. And I think it helps to have an executable modeling system as opposed to a real implementation. So me building something in Fabric, for instance.
You're saying some kind of simulation? Is that what you're talking about here?
An executable modeling system. We used to do that in Smalltalk all the time. We would take your requirements and we'd create executable models of the requirements. And then you could, to your point, in a discussion like this where we have debates about, in a sense, terms, we would just invent new terms on the fly, add them to, in a sense, the model and see how it worked, what the responsibilities were, what the dependencies were and all that. And it was far more productive than actually trying to implement something, for sure. And you got a lot more stability earlier in the process by having these models as opposed to trying to go into implementations, which are completely much more challenging in many ways and much more restrictive, as we've heard on the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's good if you have a lot of time to do stuff. But again, it's always a spectrum, right? Between
You're right. Time is the big issue, and that's exactly what the DSLs
In the long run, like Keane said, we are all dead. So for the specific case of implementation in India, for example, India Stack, part of which is a digital locker, which is like a wallet, and it's backed by biometrics for authentication. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem behind it, and it actually is servicing people right now. If we tell them, look, we should create a model and then sort of see how the system behaves, they'll tell you, look, we are building this because the need is there. And maybe what we bake into that system is a way to change it, upgrade it, make modifications, which they are forced to by, like I said, some meta level intervention, like the courts or international agreements like FATF. Whatever it is, it brings to bear other outside forces on these systems that think they can do anything. So I agree with you that maybe there should be an agency that, or somebody who creates these sort of thought experiments that can be actually then also put into action through this modeling software. Anyway, all this is fascinating. Does anybody else have any thoughts on what's, today and for the next year, what we should be doing? Because this is the last call this year. The next call is on December 25th, which has been canceled, of course. And we're going to have the one on January 8th, which will be 4 weeks from now. And I hope that Kim Cameron will be able to show up and talk about some of these topics. And if anyone else has anything else to add, I'd be glad to listen. I think we have a couple of minutes because I don't see anybody coming on our time slot. And if people have, 2 or 3 minutes to spare. I also invite you to interact on the mailing list. or anywhere else for that matter, to suggest the direction in which we should be going, the identity working group, which what has been useful, what has not been useful, all of these things are important. So should I end the meeting then? I think I'm going to.
I think we're out of time, but thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Good discussion. Appreciate it.
See you in the new year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year, everyone. And thanks for the nice conversation in the chat, too.
Hi there. This is